Detach yourself from the notion that failures are failures. Failures are nothing but stop signs that tell you not this way.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder and podcast producer at Max Podcasting, and you can email me at max@maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 184, and today's guest is Beata Shilett. Beata is the growth architect, and she previously sold her business. My mouth is like completely full of saliva. She previously sold her business, Beata Works, to a little company owned by Bill Gates. In this episode, we talk everything from creating a photography business, making tweaks to scale your business, what she did to get connected with Bill Gates in the first place, and why taking a little break every now and then isn't too shabby for your business, actually might be the best thing you can do for your business at that moment. It is Beata. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Beata Shilett, aka Beyonce Shilett, if you forget how to pronounce her name, the growth architect and the woman behind Beata Works. Sold a business to Bill Gates. Plenty of amazing stuff we're going to get into today. Beata, how you doing today?
I'm so excited, Max. Let's do this.
Perfect. So, Beyonce, how was your last tour? No, I couldn't resist. But
you now have to tell everybody how we arrived at Beyonce because they're going to go, what?
Yeah, so I was talking to my friend Jay-Z, and he mentioned that I was practicing pronouncing your name earlier, which I think I've nailed so far, knock on wood. But you said, if you just forget how to pronounce Beata, I just tell people Beyonce. And then all of a sudden people are interviewing Beyonce. So it's the same thing. Here we are. To be honest, I was starstruck before, and now I'm extra starstruck. So thank you.
Well, we got to throw a lifeline wherever we can, Max.
You have a phenomenally fascinating life, and we're going to get into the business world. But before we do that, you clearly have a passion for photo design. In fact, you even went to school for photo design. Where does this burning passion for photos come from in the first place?
That's a question nobody's ever asked me before. I think for me, it was about wanting to do something that was a little bit more creative than the regular route. And being from Germany, and this is kind of a fun little story, Max, is that in Germany, we take everything very, very seriously. So when I was going through my aptitude test as I'm about to leave school, and I wasn't in the smart school, I was in the okay, not so smart school. They give you the 16-page aptitude test, and it just takes you through pages and pages and pages. Do you like being outside? Are you afraid of heights? Do you mind physical labor? Are you afraid of schlepping stuff? And, you know, I'm being all good and all German. I'm crossing all of this, and I'm doing my thing. And guess what? At the end of the 16 pages, it said I should be doing.
Probably something that you didn't want to do.
A roofer. It says I should be a roofer. So not that I find roofing not interesting for people who like that kind of work, but it certainly wasn't what I had in mind for myself. So I realized very early on, Max, that the stuff that a lot of people talk about in what fits the norm wasn't for me. So I just looked at things that I thought were interesting. And I happened to know a photographer, and he took me for like a day, and I was, you know, dilly-dallying around the photo studio, and I loved it. And I said, I want to do that. There it was. And then I said, I'm going to be a photographer one day.
It had to be something pretty compelling that latched onto you that first day. If you go from just trying this out to, ooh, this is what I want to do. What is it that like grabbed at your soul? That sounds really intense, but you know what I mean?
It was the dumbest thing you can ever imagine. So I remember that he was photographing a job where he did like linens and bedding and stuff like that. And this was way before Photoshop and where, you know, people had to go with a pencil and retouch themselves. And he showed me on how he folded a piece of the bedding in such a way that he then could later retouch the needle to go through it to demonstrate on what the fabric would look like if the needle was stuck in there. And, you know, today this makes no sense to anybody because, first of all, the technology has long gone out the door and Photoshop does everything. But to me, what it was that there was an ability to pick something in a particular way on how we wanted it to be perceived, and that we could change how something was and made it look a particular way to make it more attractive or compelling or interesting. And that's got what got me hooked.
And there's a very evident attention to detail there that I'm sure has flown through into your business career as well. How long did you get started in this photo world before you decided to switch things up and move to the US?
So the story goes that I studied photography at the Institute of Photo Design in Munich, and then I became a photographer / photo assistant. And I learned very, very quickly that I was way better at the business behind things than at the actual photography. I realized something that a lot of people that are in the creative arts, you know, learn is to have a particular style in your creative expression. You have to have experience and a point of view. And I realized, and I was, I think, 20 at the time, that in order to get such a viewpoint, it would take me a long time, or that it just takes the time it takes to have this experience, to have these viewpoints. And I didn't want to do that. And so I became photo editor at Elle magazine. And I did that, and I ran the photo department of Elle magazine. So I got to still be creative by working with the world's greatest photographers. And then I decided that how important can something be that changes twice a year, like fashion? And again, I was bored and I decided I was going to go and have an adventure. And so I left for the United States. So from the day I started photography school to the day I immigrated, it was about 5 years.
And looking back now, how would you summarize this adventure in one word?
WTF? What was I?
Hey, that's three words. Well, that's an acronym for three words. So I don't even know. I'll give you credit for a tie.
I would say if I were to be forced into one word, I would say crazy.
Well, we like crazy here. We like wild. So let's get to your entrepreneurship journey. What made you compelled to start your own business?
Because I was going through a period of time here in Los Angeles that was a short series of disasters. So we had riots, fires, floods, followed by an earthquake. And the job that I was in was very hard hit. And so I got laid off. And I was really unemployable. So I had to figure out how to do this on my own. That's really why I started. Not by desire, but because I had to.
So you felt like your back is against the wall in a way. What was it about the going your own route that seemed so appealing as opposed to trying to get another job somewhere?
I realized that at that time, you know, I had a small child. I was a new mom, and I had to figure out how was I going to be doing all of the above? How could I be a mom? How could I find professional fulfillment? How could I call the shots? I think, Max, the reality of it really is at the end of the day, I don't like following instructions. I'm much better giving them. That there was a part where it was just, okay, this is just the natural logical conclusion. And I started my business because I was laid off and these clients still needed somebody to work with. So, you know, my boss says, I don't want to do this division anymore. You can continue if you want to do this on your own, but I'm not paying for it. And so I'm like, okay, great, let's do it.
since you're not fond of following instructions, we'll remove this segment that has me giving you instructions like brushing your teeth and, you know, the typical, you know, typical interview topics. But
thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Of course, I thought it'd be easy on you for a little bit of this, but everything you're saying is very clear and direct about this is what feels like the right decision for me in this environment. And you mentioned, you and the world had been through a bunch of disasters in a row. You know, you got a kid at home, your plate is full. It's pretty miraculous. Miraculous. We'll just invent that as an alternative to miraculous. I think I said it again, but it's pretty cool to be able to start a business out of this, especially I know that you were pretty well in debt as well. How did Beata Works, the company that you eventually sold to Bill Gates, how did that start taking form?
It was because I had been hired when I was still in my an employee by Levi Strauss, the company, but the German division. And when they came, I said, how did you even find out about me? Because I wasn't a producer before that. So I was doing photography representation and I was doing still photography production. And then she said to me, somebody said, call Beate in Los Angeles. I was like, that's amazing. That somebody can find me in a city with what, like 11 million people, just because somebody says, call Beate in Los Angeles. So that must then be my company name, Beate Works. And that's how it came about. So I figured if more people say call Beate in Los Angeles, that's at least how they can find me.
You have a perfect name for that too, because you're certainly the first Beate we've had on the Wild Business Growth podcast. You do follow Beyonce, so we had her on earlier. But I love business name origin stories like that, because it rolls off the tongue. It's natural. And when you think about it on a practical level, if people are looking for you, it makes sense to have your name in your business. Obviously, Max Podcasting, I'm a little bit biased as well. But the stories like that just always make me smile. So you have your name set up. There's so many I've always been intrigued by photography, but I know very little about it overall. What specialty within photography would you say that Beata Works really, really specialized in?
So there was a couple of layers of that. So originally I started out when I was representing photographer Anna Beata Works with a lot of California lifestyle photographers, because I knew that people would come to California for the California lifestyle. We did Ocean Pacific, we did Too Hot Brazil, we did Massimo, we did a lot of these brands that were very specific to a California lifestyle. And that then expanded into the production part of the business, where then Levi Strauss and Wrangler and BMW and Mercedes-Benz also came to Los Angeles because they were looking sort of for that cool producer that knew all these locations where all these lifestyle shots were taken. And so that became kind of my specialty. And when the transformation, after I lost the photographer representation and the production business, you know, one because of a bad employee, the other one because of September 11th, and my business crashed, you know, in September 11th in one day. I mean, there was no more production after that day. My business shifted over to architecture, interior, and celebrity photography, but celebrity at home photography. So if we look at what made Beata Works, and, you know, well known eventually, it was that I took the idea of celebrity at home stories. And while I did not invent the category, I made it a worldwide phenomenon.
Can you share an example of one of those celeb in-home stories that just to put a full picture, no pun intended, of what exactly you were doing?
Yes. So for example, the photographers I represented as, you know, for their stock photography were photographers that were the A-listers. Now you have to remember, I'm a photographer myself. I worked at Elle magazine, so I'm used to A-list photographers, right? The top of the top.
Yeah. Oh, me too. I mean, who isn't, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, look, you know, and maybe this is like a big talking point, a wild talking point, is that if you do the work, okay, and if you go after A, why bother with C and practice until you get to B to A? You got A, B, and C's automatically on board. You know, it's like, you know, that's what I did. So I went after the A players, Max.
I like it. Are there any names that you can drop of well-known people that you've worked with?
Yes. I mean, you know, certainly in my career, I have worked with Helmut Newton and George Harrell, you know, Douglas Kirkland, some of the really big, well-known, old-fashioned names, all the way to, you know, people that are very well-known, like Umberto Gili in his particular type of category, Peter Esteson, Fernando Bengoechea, who was the partner of Nate Burgess, who vanished in the tsunami. That was one of my key people, you know. So yes, Peter Lindbergh in the fashion sense. So once you have this recognition that the top people are usually a lot more professional and no bullshit versus all the people that are trying to be something, it makes business so much easier. You just have to put your big girl pants on and operate on that level and make sure that they understand that you are part of it. So to go back to the example you were just talking about, so these photographers, these A-list photographers, were working for the largest and most well-known magazines in the world. Vogue, Casa, Elle magazine, Hello magazine in London, you know, was one of our big buyers. So these top photographers had the top outlets, magazine outlets in the world. And because they are the top photographers, they also worked with the top architects and the top interior designers who happened to decorate the A-list in who's who in music, acting, performing. So it was one day, one of my photographers, I believe it was Peter Esteson, came and said to me, "Hey, my Julianne Moore home just came out of embargo. Can you sell it?" Yes. As a matter of fact, I can. Because when I was a photo editor at Elle magazine, what I used to do is buy these stories. So I knew exactly what I needed to do. And so I set up an international syndication of partner agencies. And I licensed in 79 countries. And so when I got a celebrity story like Julianne Moore, Francis Ford Coppola, Madonna, a Seal, I would then take these stories and put them on the ticker and send them out overnight. And the ticker back then was, shocking, a fax machine. And I
great times, wonderful times.
Wonderful times. Until, you know, we eventually upgraded to email. And I would send that out. And in the morning, I came in and I had sold it 30 times. Because they went to all their magazines and they said, our supplier in the United States just got Madonna's home. And while I was sleeping, they'd be engaging in a bidding war to sell these stories. And we sold Madonna's house, I think, 36 times worldwide. Even years after she wasn't living there anymore.
Oh my God. And now I own the house. So it's pretty crazy how it comes full circle now. You're working with team members and partners and these big name celebrity. And this is really stuff that's all around the world there. A lot needs to go right behind the scenes in the way that you set up your business in order to make projects like this successful, make your business run smoothly. Can you share any insight on your approach to setting up systems and making things more efficient for your business overall?
I love systems and processes. I am so glad we get to talk about this. This is just my favorite.
Of course. Well, let's move on to a different topic. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, I think for me, the way I look at processes, systems, productivity tools is how can I utilize this to make something easier and smoother? How do I make myself obsolete as much as I possibly can? And how can I run something that is as automated as possible? And I did set these systems up way before CRMs and all these things became a thing. We used to sit down and we had our own FileMaker Pro database that we ourselves programmed and mapped out and wireframed on what needed to happen until somebody figured out, hey, why don't I just create a database and sell that to other people? But for me, it was always that if I do an action once and sell it once, or if I do an action once and sell it 30 times, which one's my preferred way of doing it? Well, surprise, the latter, right? So when you set up systems and processes and procedures in your business, I have a method that I call the what's next method. So Max comes, is looking for a celebrity home story. What's next? I'm going to have to offer Max something. All right, what's next? Max likes what he sees, or Max does not like what he sees, or option three, Max now has an idea of what he's looking for. So if it's A, what happens next? If it's B, what happens next? If it's C, can I source it? You know, where can I go? Is it worth it for me to look? And so I always had this innate ability, and I think it's my personality. Maybe it's because I'm German. Maybe the engineering runs through my blood. I don't know. But it's just something that comes really natural to me where I see it and immediately in my head, it's like the whole formula just forces itself as a picture in my forehead, and then it just wants to come out. And so I do a lot of system formula design for my private clients that come with these ideas, and it's all this convoluted mess and takes them 10 minutes to explain what they do. And then I work with them for a day. And at the end of the day, they walk away with a system that has five steps or five elements. And it's, you know, it's listed in a particular way. They know how to talk about it, has a unique value proposition. It's positioned in a particular way. To me, it's not even difficult. I can't imagine why would not everybody know how to do that. But that's right. That's my zone of genius, my superpower. That's really easy to me. So systems and processes and procedures have always played an enormous part in my life.
That's a phenomenal zone of genius or superpower to have as a business owner. Because I think that's something so many people struggle with is getting the systems right. And obviously it's like it makes the difference between it being a yellow light and a green light for your business growing. Or a red light if things get tough, but something like that. So like the what's next method, for example, how do you communicate that out to your team or freelancers, whoever you're working with, to make sure that that system gets multiplied out?
I actually project manage in Asana. So Asana is my favorite project management software. I think if it's done right, it does the job of a full person. It allows me to assign tasks, to manage them, to make sure it comes back in time, that they're meeting their deadlines. I see where what is stuck. I have a particular way to map it out so that as I map it out, I have a visual reference to where everything is. And I take a lot of time to make sure that once I've designed a workflow, that my team understands exactly how this needs to flow. And I'll say and do anything to make them get it. I have a new YouTube channel optimization person, specialist on my team. And he wasn't assigning tasks to the next person the way we had outlined it. And I probably recorded like four screen share videos until he finally got it. And at the very end of it, I said to him, you do understand, if you don't assign this to other people, they cannot do their job and I cannot pay them. And then their families don't eat. You do not want to be responsible for that just because you forgot to assign something. So make sure that we are all as a team taking care of each other. That did the trick.
And I think food as a deep driver of stuff is fantastic because I think when it all comes down to it, we're just all motivated by food.
You know, that's what we do, Max, as business owners. We just try. We'll see what sticks, right? Whatever resonates with a person. I had tried everything else, and that was the only thing that worked. So yeah, I'm going to use it.
That's great. And now I'm hungry again, as always. But when you take these systems and apply them back to what you built with BeataWorks, what would you say is the number one thing that helped you scale to the point that your business would be sellable one day?
There was actually a number of things. So we have to remember, and let's just point this out, I was $135,000 in debt. I was about to go down. And that was on top of a decade of bad luck, fires, floods, riots, earthquakes, September 11th, a lawsuit, betrayal. I mean, you name it. All the stuff you hear that happens to other people all happened to me. And then my dad died. And so I had to figure out how to get out of it. And the first step was to really look into what I didn't do right the first time. And it was, I had given people too much power so that they thought that it was their process, that they were doing all the work instead of, because they didn't see what goes on behind the scenes. You know, they were just in the office picking up the phones and they thought that was all there was. They didn't realize all the other things that I did, which caused that betrayal. Once I figured out what I had not done right, I said, I am creating an equity-based business that is going to make money when I am not there. And the only way to do that is to figure out a business model where you do the work once and then the work kind of repeats itself, right? You know, based on the model we were just talking about. And so I deliberately set this up for acquisition. That was the whole point. What happened to me before was never, never going to happen to me again. I made sure that this time I was going to be in control. And so from the day I opened the doors to that stock photography business officially to the day I sold it was 3 years.
Oh my God. That's very well done. I'm exhausted thinking about that, but it's phenomenal. And it goes back to what you said with, by the way, I keep using the word phenomenal today, which is like, I feel like is my next word that I'm just going to overuse to the ground, like amazing. So you're both phenomenal and amazing, Beata.
Thank you. I'll just take that.
Of course. Yeah. I've never used those words before. It goes back to what you said earlier about making yourself obsolete. And so you were so intentional with that from the early days of putting yourself more behind the scenes, but really you're not, in a way you're behind the scenes in terms of like not doing the, like doing the work, but you are doing so much to put this business in a position to scale, which I think can be the most important thing for so many business owners. And speaking of selling your business and scaling it to the point of selling your business, at what point did this possibility of some unknown person named Bill Gates and a company he owned, yes, when did the possibility of you getting involved and selling it to him one day open its door?
You know, let's set the stage for this. I am in one of my favorite cities in the world, in Prague, and I'm on the rooftop.
Absolutely beautiful, by the way. Isn't that the best? We can go about Prague.
Yes, we
forever,
can go. We can continue now. I'm in Prague on a rooftop with a cocktail in my hand. And my mentor and good friend, Jeff, just had announced that he had sold his company to Jupiter Media for $70 million. And his specialty was food.
Here we go again.
I know. I'm telling you, that's the theme. So if you guys are hungry, you know, it's by design. So Jeff had said to me, if he can do it with food, then I can do it with interior and architecture and living lifestyle types images. So as we're on the rooftop and he's standing there with big grin on his face, you know, $70 million in the pocket. And I said, man, I mean, how'd you do that? And he just looks at me and he says, and you, my dear, are next.
Whoa. Whoa. He put it in your DNA.
I actually think that's exactly what he did. I think he gave me like this secret injection of, oh, selling my business.
It's like Spider-Man with the radioactive spider. It's the same thing.
It's the same, it's exact same method. I came back and I thought about what do I need to do to make something like this happen and really put myself on the map. So I came up with this big plan. And the plan was that I was going to launch a second collection. So that I had my celebrity at home photography, which was, you know, my lead that made me kind of famous, my architectural and interior images that we sold to all the paint companies. So if you, even today, if you go to pick up a paint brochure, chances are my images are in there. When you, if you have an interior design book at home and you see all these great examples of homes, look it up and check. There's probably a bunch of images still in there that are from Beata Works. That's my company. You go to IKEA and you pick up that famous photo of the bicycle leaning at one of the canals in black and white. That says Beata Works on it. Sold over a couple million times.
The mental image of a bicycle leaning near a canal is like so peaceful and calming to me. I don't know what it is.
Yes. And you and several other million people who then hung it. I have received a fair amount of calls where people go like, oh my God, I never knew that. But the other day I was like hitting my head on the wall and I'm looking and boom, there's your name on it. You've been in my living room the entire time. So I came up with the idea that I needed to launch another collection to really round up our offer. And so we created a whole new collection. We gave it a fancy name. And then on the next conference, we did an official launch and we spent money on it. And that's what put us on the map. That's when everybody went and said, we need to be paying attention to her. Now I was putting myself out there, right there in the window, that I was an up and coming company. And that is what then attracted people's attention enough. So I put out the word to the three large companies. And I said, I'm considering putting the business up for sale. Are you interested? And one said, no. The other one says, we'll pay you basically nothing. And can you be our slave? And I said, no. And the third one says, oh my God, the celebrity homes, we want that so bad. And that happened to be a Bill Gates owned private company by the name of Corbis. And then they asked me what I wanted. And I named a couple million. You know, I knew what the number was. The number was the number I never had to work again in my life. And then they said, okay. And that's how I sold my business to Bill Gates.
Bam. In a nutshell. That's so awesome. I mean, people might think like, oh my God, that's unbelievable. How do you like selling your business to Bill Gates? That just sounds like something out of a fairy tale or something. But you clearly put in the work of creating this big launch, putting the package together so that you're appealing and you hit all these different areas and you spent money behind it. You put those marketing dollars to work to the fact that this was an actual launch. It wasn't just like, hey, we're going to, you know, roll out something exciting. So that's bravo on and putting everything together at the right time to the right people. How did you actually get in contact with the Bill Gates camp?
At a conference. You know, at that very conference. And then I made the phone calls and I said, we were exploding, which we were at the time. And our numbers kept going nothing but up. And I said, this was a great opportunity to invest. And we did well. And when we sold, 6 months later, the entire photography industry imploded. All of it. That's when photography became a commodity and pictures were worth pennies all of a sudden. I mean, we used to sell images for thousands and thousands of dollars. 6 months after I sold, that all vanished, except on the celebrity at home side.
So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's get to inspiration and creativity. And I'm curious on your standpoint, away from work, what you do to stay creative and stay inspired. So let's hit on that first. And then I want to tie it to the growth architect. So what is your favorite way to unplug and come up with fresh ideas?
I think that for me, one of the things I really like is being outside. So I hike a fair amount. I ski. When I'm out, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, a
Oh,
lot.
thank you, by the way. I'm
Yes, yes, yes,
heartwarmed.
yes, absolutely. That's where it's at. Because when I hear smart people interviewing smart people, there's always inevitably an idea that comes, or you go like, oh, that's so dumb, but that's what I, oh, well, we could do that. And so I find that listening to inspirational talks or reading books that, inspire me, where I hear somebody do something outrageous, and a lot, I do a lot of mindset work, a ton of mindset work. I'm really diligent about my daily practice with making sure I'm listening to things so that I don't go down the road of the what ifs, or a friend of mine calls it should will. And the other part is the, because I'm visual, to make sure that I don't suffer from sensory deprivation. And I think a lot of people, especially in this never-ending pandemic, are suffering from sensory deprivation because they just don't have a stimulating input. So during the shutdowns, I would check out what some of the dance companies did, sort of secretly behind the scenes, and I'd watch it on Zoom, just to have some sort of an impact of, oh my God, that felt so good. Oh, that was so beautiful. Just to get yourself back in these moments of appreciating these moments where something is so well done. So, doing podcasts and sharing information and inspiring and bringing hope. That's our job right now, is to keep that sensory information going so people are not going to give up, but that they're staying with it until they find their moment in time.
That's beautiful. And there's so many ways to get that. Just watch something or go out for a walk or just experience something that gives you that motivation and gives you a refresh, whether it's going to the gym or doing something less structured. Like it's amazing what something even for just 5 or 10 minutes, ideally a little bit more, can do for you. So that's inspiration on your end as a person, as a business owner, as the growth architect, what you're doing now. How do you inspire your clients to be inspired and grow their businesses?
I have a particular way where I connect what they do with the greater vision. And I'm going to give you an example for that. So I'm working right now with a business owner who owns a tutoring company. And I looked at what's going on in the education system, and I said, what's happening is that these kids are completely being left behind. That we told them no screen time. And then the pandemic came and we said, now it's only screen time and you better be focused for 8 consecutive hours. And now we are involving them in conversations about masks, safety. We take in all their sense of belonging, safety, social skills. We've taken all of that away because of what's going on. So I said to him, you're not tutoring. I said, you're making sure that kids are going to have a fair shot at not losing 2 years of their lives. And when I come at it from the perspective of what's the larger image here? What's the larger way we're doing this? Or another gentleman I mentor who has an accounting firm, I said, you're not offering accounting services. I said, you're making sure that business owners are making money. And so they can employ people so that these people can feed their families and build their own lives and buy homes and send their kids to schools. You're part of creating a much larger infrastructure and opportunity for people, because the more successful your clients are, the more people they can employ, the more people they can serve, the more people they can pay to provide a service, and we all do better. So I think that the most important part about inspiration in business, or for my business owner, for my clients, for me, what's really, really important, I want them to know at every moment of their day what that North Star is that shines above it all. Because if it's just doing what I do today or going to a much larger goal and providing income, inspiration, and lifestyle for other people, that it's like night and day.
It is. You have a knack for inspiring and a knack for, what do they call it? Like peeling back the layers of the onion and peeling back, like just finding what the core thing is that motivates. I don't think that metaphor works, but you know what I mean? getting to the pure motivator.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely correct. It's like, I call it an activation. I believe everybody that works with me is activated, and whether they know that or not, but they're here now for a bigger push. I don't coach on things. I consult on strategies on how to make an impact in the world.
You bite them with that radioactive spider.
Yes.
There we go. Bam. Spider-Man, the next movie with 17 Spider-Men in it, coming out next. And Beyonce as the star.
Beyonce. Starring Beyonce.
Let's wrap up with some rapid-fire Q&A. You ready for it?
Yep, go ahead.
All right, let's get wild. Speaking of Beyonce, what is the funniest way that someone has legitimately mispronounced your name?
The funniest way? I mean, it really would be Beyonce. I mean, I've had
You actually get Beyonce? You're not just saying?
Oh my God, all the time. Do you think it's a joke? This is taken out of... This is taken out of real life. The other one was when the Mazda Miata first came out, people thought that I was the Beata version of the Mazda Miata.
Oh, got it. There's a lot. Yeah, a lot you can do with the rhymes there. Very cool. Could eat Piatas. Now I'm going. We're going to write a whole kids nursery rhyme book. You studied in Munich, which I've been to once, an absolutely beautiful town. It can be pretty touristy, though. What is another German town that isn't quite as well known, but you think people should absolutely go and see it?
Probably Nuremberg, which is where I grew up. And Nuremberg has a very bad reputation, obviously, historically. But Nuremberg is an absolutely, absolutely beautiful, beautiful city.
What's your like one-line pitch for the beauty of Nuremberg?
Well, we have a beautiful castle.
Salt.
And they actually have these games where they go like the medieval reenactment things, which a lot of people really, really enjoy. So there is a time in the year, and the Christkindl market in Nuremberg is the most famous in the world, I believe. And it's the most amazing and inspiring thing that you can go to if you like that kind of thing.
Oh, those are the best. Yeah, if you go around that time of year, it's so fun. This isn't a Christmas thing, but do they have good? You're gonna have to correct me on the pronunciation, but do they have good spätzle?
Spätzle, yeah. Well, spätzle is not traditional.
Oh, it's so, spätzle. It's like spätzle. You pronounce the lay at the end.
Yeah, spätzle. Because
my whole life has been a lie.
well, if you're Bavarian, you know spätzle is, you know, what can I tell you? It's like a whole bunch of stuff in there, yeah. And of course the sausages and the bun and the Glühwein.
Yes, absolutely. I've had the Glühwein in, I think I've only had it in Berlin and then London in like their fake German Christmas market, but absolutely so good.
Gasps.
Exactly. And then what is something a little quirky about your personality that your family or your team, somebody calls you out for, but it's just who you are?
I am really trying hard to be the only funny German, you know.
I don't know why that line was so funny, but that was good.
I actually went and I took a comedy class, and then he asked me what my shtick was. And I said, my shtick is the funny German. And then he says, there are no funny German. Oh, I got it.
maybe that's why I found it so funny. All right. And then last thing, you mentioned you're a skier. Where would be your dream place to ski on the planet?
Oh, that's a good one. I've never been to Vermont, so I think I want to go and ski in Vermont. I think I also want to ski in, I hear there's crazy skiing in Argentina, which I also would like to do. I skied pretty much all of all over Europe. So those are the two places. Vermont, huh? Is that kind of like really boring?
No. You've said too much because, no, my fiance Dana, her family and her grandparent, her grandma Phyllis, actually, shout out Phyllis, she still lives up in Vermont, but they basically like grew up going up to Vermont several times a year and would ski on Stratton Mountain and with Bromley there. It's a beautiful area. It's actually where, you know, I haven't skied that much, so it's where I've skied for the majority of my time on the mountains. But no, it's absolutely beautiful out there. And especially if you live in like a city environment, like I live close to New York, and taking that few hour drive up there, it's like therapeutic, especially if you're driving at night and you can see the stars again and you can, you know, you're away from all the city lights and all that. Like it's beautiful up there. So very cool. Definitely check out Stratton if you're in Vermont, but there's so many great resorts there. Argentina sounds decent too, though. I'm sure that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I'm always up for a little adventure.
Absolutely. So full circle back to adventure. Beyonce, I'm just going to keep repeating that. Thank you so much for sharing your story, your business tips, your insight, your systems and processes, and of course, skiing in this new crazy land called Vermont. But where's your preferred place, as a little tongue twister, for people to connect with you and learn more about what you do?
Yeah, I mean, reach out on either Instagram or join our Facebook group, Entrepreneur Forum, or I actually have a thing where I'll give them my email address, and that's bc@beatachalette.com. I actually answer my own email, and I'd love to hear from you. Tell us what you take away. Oh, and while we're at it, will you please go and make sure you subscribe to Max's podcast and leave a comment, because he is doing this out of love and passion to share the information. Let's show him some love and passion, and you know, reach out and just say, hello, this is what I learned, and keep doing what you're doing, because that's what makes us continue to do what we do.
Absolutely. I'm heartwarmed yet again. Thank you so much. And it is out of love and passion. I'm always for love and passion, and I have a habit of making things weird, so I'm going to shut up. But last thing here, final thoughts, the stage is yours. It could be a quote, a line, just any parting wisdom you want to leave. Take us home here.
Detach yourself from the notion that failures are failures. Failures are nothing but stop signs that tell you not this way. Embrace it, detach from the outcome, and have a little bit more fun with failing faster.
Thank you, Beata, so much for sharing your stories, wisdom, tips, stories, and wisdom in Beata. And thank you, wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite app and tell a friend about the podcast. You can also find us on Good Pods, some good pods there. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!